हरे हे ओ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, topic 12, the purification of men and things. Okay, so we talked about the element of the death and then other forms of impurity. But a man having spent his strength is purified merely by bathing. A woman is purified on a miscarriage in as many days and nights as months elapsed after conception. And a menstruating female becomes pure by bathing after the menstrual secretion has ceased to flow. Vritti, Parasara clarifies further. A woman regains her personal cleanliness on the fourth day of her flow after bathing, but she is not privileged to undertake any rite. Whether Daiva, pertaining to the gods, or Pitra, in honor of one's departed manes, till the complete cessation of the discharge for the month. A woman suffering from any kind of uterine hemorrhage is not affected by the discharge as regards her personal cleanliness, as much as the flow in her case is a disease and not the outcome of normal physiological function. Right. So it's also stated later on the fourth day she's considered very saintly because she's been purified of any impure thoughts that are there. So then that also is there. But the point it's making is her personal cleanliness is on the fourth day, no matter what's happened. But if it continues past that, then she can't perform any rites. But she's clean. Like that. So in other words, things to do with the gods or the Pitris.
In regard to the man right in front, purified merely by bathing.
Yes.
That's enough. That next morning, any time?
Basically.
Some
ladies,
they don't go to the temple during
the
periods.
That's, in India, that's pretty traditional. You know, that they'll do like that. They don't go in. They don't. Generally, in the traditional houses, the houses are built so that there's another section of the house that's complete in itself. The ladies just go and spend their time there. So it's got its own bedding, its own clothes, its own everything. And then the main house, the men have to take care of it. So they do all the cooking, all the cleaning, all everything. So, you know, like that.
I read
Prabhupada,
he said that they should just wear silk and not wear any clothes.
Okay, you've read that.
Okay.
Yeah. So then, that's main thing. But the point is what comes across is what's important to note is that we're not the body, but that doesn't mean that it's not impure. Just like we're not stool, right? But it doesn't mean it's not impure. So the difficulty comes up is when it's a matter of it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Because it does matter. Otherwise, why would it be the rule? So, one, the mentality is not considered pure at the time, and the body is not pure at the time. So, therefore, if there's that stipulation by wearing silk, you can go to the temple, then great. But the normal thing is stay out of the way. Don't do the tusi puja. Don't try to put yourself out front. Don't try to just be there and be happy and think of Krishna. Because the point is if you're dealing on that level, the only way that we're going beyond the general rule is because of the absorption in Krishna. So one who remembers Krishna is therefore purified. Does that make sense? But that doesn't mean that therefore, you know, we get into a mentality of, it doesn't matter. Because it does. It does. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if that's there, then that's great, because I haven't heard that there is something that, that mentions that. It's always, you know, looking for some direction. But I just know traditional families in India, they don't go to the temple. But if on consideration, because we're working on the platform of surrender to Krishna, then if that stipulation is there, then that makes it a whole lot easier. Yeah, and a whole lot better. But it's still, one should refrain from doing other things. Okay. So that's the normal standard. So the problem is take it, you know, generally if you take it to one extreme, they always take it to the other. And we're not the body, so it doesn't matter. So then if that's the case, then we're not the body. The husband doesn't have to need to take a bath. You know, he doesn't need to shave. He's not the body. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is we only pick and choose according to, you know, social considerations of where we think we'll get benefit and not. It's not that we go across the board, because, you know, the guy doesn't wear the cologne you like, then, you know, it's the end of the world, you know, so like that. You know what I'm saying? He picks up some stupid thing and he smells like, you know, a horse barn or something like that. So then, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not cool. So, but at the same time, is it doesn't matter if the woman's impure. She's not the body, and she's transcendental. So you know what I'm saying? That is a symptom of less intelligence. That's where the symptoms are told, because it's a lack of discrimination. It's not that. Oh no! Well, because we'll dress the silks, stay out of the way, and in this way take darshan of the deities and stuff like that. That's intelligent, because then one can discriminate that the soul is pure, and one maintains that purity by consciousness, but the body is impure. It doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So if that is appreciated, then it'll work. Does that make sense? You know, it said, oh no, but it's important. We'll also do the Tulsi Puja. Hey, there's about 1,000 ladies here who can do the Tulsi Puja. You know, like that. But no, but then you have to manage and arrange. It's too difficult. Just means you don't want to do that. You don't want to make the arrangement. You know what I'm saying? So those kind of things, that's the meaning of less intelligent. It means lack of discrimination. It doesn't mean, you know, low IQ or, you know, it doesn't mean stupid. It just means lack of discrimination. You know, it doesn't mean that there's not plenty of men who are also not less intelligent. Also, yes.
So regarding holy worship, if one has the
means if there's someone else who can do it, then better they do. If not, take your bath, wear fresh clothes, and then do. Because the point is just to appreciate that it's not an ideal situation. It's not that it's just like anything else. You know what I'm saying? If the man went to pass stool and didn't wash himself afterwards, he wouldn't be able to get away with we're not the body. You know what I'm saying? So you have basically a similar situation. Maybe not quite as extreme, but you know what I'm saying? So that's the funny thing, is it's that it just goes from one side to the other. Either it's like, you know, the person just feels, you know, goes and hides in a hole, or they're right out there in the front more than any other time. So it's like, the point is it's not ideal, and if it can be avoided, which much of the time it can be, then we do. If it can't be avoided, then you know, we're more careful. Does that make sense? Or like that. Or one does Manasa Puja or something. You know what I'm saying? The difficulty comes is that this area hasn't developed much, and we haven't developed a tradition, because for at least those who would be helpful in establishing a tradition are generally the ones that fight the most against it. You know what I'm saying? You know, because we're not, it's always we're not the body. But if we're not the body, then why is it that, you know, it has to, you know, this day is the women's day to give class? That's a bodily consideration. You know, it's not that the other days, you know, because you're a man. I'm giving class because I'm a man. The reason I'm sitting here giving this class is because I'm a man. Like that. You know what I'm saying? It never even comes up as a consideration. The point is that the point should be, if someone's qualified to give class, they should be allowed to give class. That's the consideration. But the consideration is wholly and totally based on the body. So that's what we're saying, is that it's not balanced. Right? So therefore, you can't create a tradition. You know, I've seen some of the ladies from very, you know, these Paka Brahmin families and all, they'll stand outside the door, because from the door you can get darshan. They just stand out there. You know, because I mean, so many devotees out there anyway, because there's not sometimes not enough space. So they just stand out there. But now that I've, you know, heard this, then could you know where it is?
It's yeah. Some conversation.
Yeah, if you can find it.
I know Maha Miles, but it's a conversation with
the okay.
local when Prabhupada was here.
So okay, so that would be nice. So then, you know, that's nice, but that doesn't mean that nothing's wrong. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is to in other words, how to be intelligent enough to appreciate how to be practically involved in Krishna consciousness, but at the same time to not be involved because of false ego. Does that make sense? So it requires a balance. So that's the... Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of getting a proper balance. Because it's nothing to do with the soul, it's just to do with the body. You know, that's all. Okay. Then, rules regarding impurity when the deceased live at a distance. The above rule regarding impurity on account of death has been prescribed for cases where the kinsmen live near the deceased. Sapindikismen and Samanodaka relatives must know the following rule, to refer to cases where the deceased lived at a distance from them. He who may hear that a relative residing in a distant country has died before 10 days, after his death has elapsed, may be impure for the remainder of the period of 10 days and nights only. In other words, it's not that you're impure for 10 days, it's 10 days after the deceased has left. So if you hear about it after a week, so then there's 3 days left. Like that. That's the idea. The 10 days have passed, he shall be impure during 3 days and nights. But if a year has elapsed of the occurrence of the death, he becomes pure merely by bathing. Riti, if there is was a strong sense of closeness with a distant relative, one will remain impure during 3 nights, days and nights. So it's the three, yeah, does that make sense? So basically it's just that aspect. But if it's been that long, then it's just when you take a bath, then one is purified. Right? So, yeah, all these things come out as that, because Rupa Goswami mentions these also. The main point is that one avoids, you know, these different activities, like going to the temple and things, if all you're going to be thinking about while you're standing in front of the deities is the dead relative, then better to stay at home. But if you're not, you're going to be thinking of the Lord, then it's the same kind of principle. Therefore, you go and be absorbed in the Lord. Because the Lord, the worship of the Lord is transcendental. But that means that we have to be transcendental, right? The point is the process is transcendental, but whether we are, that's another thing. So that's why these different links. Brahmins is 10 days, Kshatriya Vaishya is 15 days, Shudra is 30 days. Because of the bodily attachment, the bodily conception. So that's why it's given longer, because it'll take the Shudra a month to get over it. The Brahmins 10 days. Does that make sense? But if it's not a problem, one's able to be able to think of the deities and that, then it's not a problem going to the temple. Yes.
So in this case, it seems it's a subtle impurity. So does. Is it passed on by touching others?
No, because physical impurity is passed by touching.
Yes.
Mental is not. Yes.
But can we say that this point can be applied, like you take shelter of the deities?
Yes, it means if that's how it works. But still, the thing is then if it's taking shelter and it's always just about you and your lamentation, that's not so ideal. The Lord should be kind of part of that. theme. That's what was the surrender was talked about, is that the only shelter is the Lord. Therefore, if that enhances one's absorption in the Lord, then fine. It's not a problem.
Instead of sitting at home and lamenting, you're thinking about this, that you go to the temple, you kind of...
Yeah, I'm saying as long as that effect is there, if you go to the temple and you continue lamenting, then give it a miss. You know what I'm saying? The point is that this is Dharma. So it's not a matter of cheap tricks. It's reality. So the person means the human being has that discrimination that here's the rule. You know, this is the principle of the rule. So there's a detail that will accomplish that principle, basically. But it's not that the rule, it's the application of the rule, the form of the rule, is actually what you're trying to accomplish. Right? So therefore, if you can attain that principle by a higher method, by worshiping the Lord, absorption in the Lord, then that's fine, that's good. But you have to understand the technical point. So unless it's a natural, spontaneous absorption in the Lord, something happens, so you just want to go to the temple, be with the deities, pray to the deities, then the technical is not necessary. Right? But for all those who say, oh, we're not the body, this and that, the technical is necessary. Does that make sense? Because generally speaking, their considerations of why it's not necessarily are purely mundane and external. Does that make sense? So the idea is, as we understand, is that normally you go to the temple to be absorbed in the deity, but if because of the loss of a relative you're absorbed in yourself, and there'll be no exchange with the deity, then, you know, better stay at home. But if by going there the exchange will be, you know, normal with the deity or even more enhanced, better. Like that. So you just have to see. You know what I'm saying? If you're looking at the deity and all you see is whoever is deceased, you know, then that's not ideal. Though, actually in truth, what it is about the person who's deceased that you would attract you so much is Krishna. But we're not seeing it that way. We're thinking it's the body. So that means if it's Krishna, they're not actually lost. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
Sometimes
things can be bothering you, not let the body, but that's probably not proper to have that so much bother. Well, the point is it's supposed to be in connection with the deity. So as long as you're able to connect those things to the deity, it works.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That's the principle. Is that, in other words, if you're in front of the Lord, then try to keep the conversation in connection with the Lord.
Okay.
You know, ideally more towards what Rupa Goswami defines as pure devotional service. But, you know, the point is get as close as you can. So the idea is if it's connected to the Lord, that's where it starts to become perfect. They've gone from carrying a whole stack of bricks like this to carrying two bricks out like this. It's more tough. Okay. A man who hears of a suppindous relative's death or of the birth of a son after the 10 days of impurity have passed becomes pure by bathing, dressed in his garments. So this is another aspect. So in other words, if there's going to be more of a lamentation, then he follows for 3 days, or if there's that closeness and all like that. But if it's not, then he just, by taking bath with his clothes on, then that's all that's required.
Maharaj, What's the significance of bathing with the clothes on?
Would you be more conscious if you took bath with your clothes on?
Probably more conscious of the clothes.
Well, I mean, it's not that you wear your Versace suits, you know, that you take bath in this. You know. This means you're Dhoti and Chudder, you know, that don't have a problem touching water. Right? Yeah, because it includes more of the, you know, the subtle body and all that. Because you identify with the clothes and different things like that. So it's just more of If an infant has not teeth, or a grown-up relative who is not a suppendant die in a distant country, one becomes at once pure after bathing in one's clothes. If within the 10 days of impurity another birth or death happens, Brahma shall remain impure only until the first period of 10 days expires. So in other words, if one person dies, and then partway through it someone else dies, then you don't have to continue the process. When the first one's done, then that's all. Okay.
It seems they had a lot of relatives then.
Yeah, so these things were something more to be considered. So that's what I'm saying is we're sitting there frothing at the mouth over so many rules. This is nothing. And if you keep notice that there's always so many that are made small here. So, you know, so we're doing okay. And even these, a lot of these, I can see going through it. See, they have a meaning more when one is in touch with the traditional culture. Then these are just enough to just get that they can get by. But if one's not, then you could even cut out some of these. You know, just stick to the main ones. And it's standard time of purity. A Brahmin shall be pure after 10 days. A Kshatriya after 12. A Vaishya after 15. And a Shudra is purified after a month. Right, so this Rupa Goswami, he uses that nectar devotion. Riti, Srila Jiva Goswami, in his commentary to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.2.119-120, quotes a list of offenses to be avoided in the discharge of devotional service. This list is taken from Hari Bhakti Vilas, wherein the quotes have been gathered from the Agamas. In this list, the fourth offense to be avoided is offering prayers to the Lord in an unclean state or without having washed properly after eating. Right, so this is, you know, talking about those things. In presenting this in the Nectar Devotion, Srila Prabhupada includes the details of the current shloka as part of the explanation. Chapter 80 writes, one should not enter the temple in a contaminated state. According to Vedic scripture, if someone dies in the family, the whole family becomes contaminated for some time, according to its status. For example, if the family is Brahmana, their contamination period is 12 days. The Kshatriya is Vaishya is 15, for Shudra is 30. Okay, let him not unnecessarily lengthen the period of impurity, right? Because he may feel bad and want to just continue in his lamentation. So you don't do it. When the time's up, that's it. So you have it two ways. There's one, you need to be considerate for 10 days, but at the same time as you only get 10 days. Right? Otherwise, some people want to continue it for years and anything like that. So it works both ways. Nor interrupt the rites to be performed with the sacred fires. In other words, if he's on a vow or a vrata, he's doing puja or these kind of things, that's his service, right? Then he doesn't interrupt that for it. That always continues. For he who performs that Agnihotra rite will not be impure, though he be a suppendant. So in other words, there's certain conditions where he doesn't become impure. Like, so then you might find, this, like temple devotees, they wouldn't have a problem. Because their lifestyle is just that of fully being engaged in the service and all that. But if it's a community member, depending upon how involved they are or not, then that might be different. Right here in Mayapur, most everybody's involved in something. But if you go to some, you know, city, then the community, some are very involved. You see them every day at the temple and that. And some they come once a week, once a month, once a year, like that. You know, so the far more it's like that, the more the consideration of that. But you know, not a problem for our devotees because they're not going to come anyway to the temple. So, hey, you know, it works out. Right? Other forms of impurity. When he has touched a menstruating woman, a woman in childbed, a corpse, or one who has touched a corpse, he becomes pure by bathing. Right? Or a chandala. Brahmana is to touch the human bone to which fat adheres, becomes pure by bathing. If it be free from fat, by sipping water, and by touching afterwards a cow or looking at the sun. Parasara states, 333. Brahmana is defiled only by unclean contact, there being no other defilement in respect of a Brahmana. Hence, by all means, a Brahmana should renounce defiling contacts. Right, so Brahman, other things don't affect him that might affect others because of his being absorbed, you know, in the philosophy and the sadhana. So just impure contact. So he's very careful about touching things that are impure. That's the main principle. Restrictions concerning libations of water. He who has undergone the performance of a vow shall not pour out libations to the dead until the vow has been completed. In other words, if you've taken a vow to do something, let's say Kartik, you say you're going to do this, you know, and do this for the whole month, until the month's over, then there's no libations of water for the dead. He doesn't do. Does that make sense? Because you're doing the vow. So by the vow, you're not impure, but also by that, you're not obliged to take part in that until the vow is over. But when he has offered water after his completion, he becomes pure in 3 days only. So he doesn't have to wait for the 10 days. There's only the 3 days, like before. Or if he's more of a state, you know, that he's always on something like that, then it would be the matter of taking bath with the clothes on. So here that means you, with your clothes on, you go down to the Ganga and take bath. No, doesn't mean in your shower. Like that. It means you go to the Ganga. But they do it for other things. When you finish a big yajna or things like that, you take bath with your clothes on. Because the point is it's in that one, it's not that you're impure from the yajna, but you have to take a bath because all the stuff that's all over you is very purifying. You know, all the ash, all the stuff from the abhishek, it's all. So you take bath with the clothes. Like that.
Is it like the avibhrita?
Avibhrita, yeah. It's called avibhrita. So there it's avibhrita. Here it's just for purification. Libations of water shall not be offered to those who neglect the prescribed rites and may be said to have been born in vain. To those born in consequence of an illegal mixture of the caste, to those who are ascetics, and to those who have committed suicide. Right? So those who don't perform their duties right, then there's no need of libations of water. Like, and those who are ascetics, then there's no need of libations of water because they're not going to the Petris, or, you know, they're elevating themselves. Like that. Or someone who's committed suicide. To women who have joined a heretical sect, who through lust live with many men, who have caused an abortion, have killed their husbands, or drink spirituous liquor. So you don't offer libations of water for them either.
It's basically
covers everything. Yeah, it's pretty good, right? Yeah. And then depending upon the heretical sect, we mean according to the Vedic version. Otherwise, you know, according to everyone, it's like if you just do something else other than what they're doing, then you're, you know, a heretic. Okay. Exceptions from impurity. A student does not break his vow by carrying out to the place of cremation his own dead teacher, acharya, sub-teacher, upadhyaya, father, mother, or guru. The taint of impurity does not fall on kings and those engaged in the performance of a vow or of a sutra, for the first are seated on the throne of Indra and the last two are very pure like Brahman. So on kings, there's not an impure period of impurity. Otherwise, then who's going to run the kingdom for the 10 days? Or, well, actually for them, 12 days. And if that's the way it works, hey, because it's a political scene, right? You can knock off a relative every 12 days, no problem. He'll never rule. You know, it's like, you know, so it's not going to, yeah. So he's therefore, like Indra, he's pure. And then those who are performing a vow or a sutra I think is one who's performing a sacrifice. So then they're always pure. So there is no impure period. So they have exceptions. Also, a student doesn't break his vow of being a brahmachari by being engaged in this. So he'll take out and then take his bath. Right? Because that's standard. Whoever carries the body or touches someone who carries the body, you take bath with the clothes on. For a king on the throne of magnanimity, immediate purification is prescribed. And the reason for that is that he is seated there for protection of the subject. So he's automatically purified because of the performance of the duty of protecting his subject. The same rule applies to the kinsmen, of those who have fallen in a riot or battle, of those who have been killed by lightning or by the king, and of those who perished fighting for cows and Brahmins, and to those whom the king wishes to be pure. Right? So if there's a riot or a battle and someone's died in that, then there's also not the period of impurity. Right? Or those struck by lightning, right? Because you're immediately purified. Like that, right? You know, or by the king, right? They're punished by the king and executed by the king. There's no period of impurity, right? And those fighting for cows or Brahmins, right? Because they're immediately elevated to the heavenly planet. Someone dies trying to protect cows or Brahmins, he's immediately, you know, goes to Indra's planet, like that. Yeah, and for whom the king wishes to be pure. The king says, no, he's not. You know, he's one of his particular persons that does something. Parasara states, 339. Mendicant yogins, parivrajakacharyas, and heroes killed in battles without scars on their backs are the two kinds of men whose souls, penetrating right through the solar disk, ascend to the higher regions. So that's without scars on their backs. Not that they're killed in battle running away from the battle. They're killed in battle, like, you know, facing their enemy. Right, so they immediately go through the sun planet and ascend to the higher regions. So they're purified by that. They pass through the sun planet. A king is an incarnation of the eight guardian deities of the world: the moon, the fire, the sun, the wind, Indra, the lords of wealth and water, Kubera and Varuna, and Yama. Because the king is pervaded by those lords of the world, no impurity is ordained for him. For purity and impurity of mortals is caused and removed by those lords of the world. By him who is slain in battle with brandished weapons, according to the law of the Kshatriyas, a shroud to sacrifice is instantly completed. And so is the period of impurity caused by his death. That is the settled rule. Okay. Yeah, so then that explains what it is, because it's equal to a... Because the Shrauta means these big sacrifices, not the daily ones. Shrauta are these special ones. Purification on the death of other relatives. Thus the purification required on the death of Sapindas has been explained to you, O best of the twice-born men. Now hear the manner in which men are purified on the death of any relative who is not a Sapinda. Having voluntarily followed a corpse, whether that of a paternal kinsman or of a stranger, he becomes pure by bathing, dressed in his clothes, by touching fire, and by eating clarified butter. Let him not allow... Wow. Vegans won't be able to be purified. Let him not allow a dead Brahmin to be carried out by a Shudra, while men of the same caste are at hand. For that burnt offering, which is defiled by a Shudra's touch, is detrimental to the deceased's passage to heaven. Right? So the point is if there's no one else, then they'll carry. Then, you know, they'll get the benefit of rendering service and like this. But if there is, then they should take care of it. At each step towards the Parasara states, 345, at each step towards the cremation ground, the twice-born ones who carry the dead body of a friendless, indignant Brahmin for cremation acquire the merit of celebrating the successive religious sacrifices as described in the Vedas. Right, so there must be a line of ones that are... Right, so with each step. So in other words, a Brahmin who you know, how you say, friendless and indigent, you know, he has nothing, no one likes him, no one knows him, or something, then if you carry him to the funeral ground, then you get all the benefits of all these sacrifices that are mentioned in the Vedas. Because otherwise, then he gets the proper benefit because he's being properly taken. That makes sense? Yeah. Modes of purification. The knowledge of Brahman, austerities, fire, holy food, earth, restraint of the internal organ, water, smearing with cow dung, the wind, sacred rites, the sun, and time are the purifiers of corporal beings. Knowledge of Brahman refers to Vedanta and the internal organ is the mind. So these are all the ways to become purified. Right? Knowledge of Brahman, that's the top highest. Austerities, fire, right? Holy food, mahaksha. Okay. Earth, right, because you can clean the body with that. Restraint of the internal organ, in other words, thoughts may be impure, but you restrain the mind, you become purified. So the mind may think of all kinds of things, it becomes impure, but by restraining it, then you become purified. Right? Water, it washes things. Smearing with cow dung, that also. The wind, you put things like, you know, your bedding, you put it out in the wind and that, it gets rid of the smells and that. Sacred rites, the sun, and also purifies, and time. Right? Just by leaving with time, things get purified.
Sometimes traveling in car, I've seen the devotees put their hands in their way to purify.
That's before or after they lick them off. Yeah, I mean, it's one way to do it. It's not ideal. Water is a lot better, you know, because also there's things, what's purified by what? You know, so it's like cotton. If you wear it and put it in the wind, it's not purified. It has to be washed with water. Means you may get rid of some of the smell or things like that, but it's not considered pure that you would use it again for doing puja. Like silk or wool can be purified by wind. Right, so there's also what can be purified by what. So generally after eating, one is purified by water. But if there's nothing else, then hey, you know. As long as the car's moving. The car's standing still and you wave your hands outside, I don't think it will work so good. Because then you don't have to bother opening the window, because then you don't make the handle dirty, right? You know, you just wave them around in the car. Make some wind, you know. Devotees are far out sometimes, right? It's like they won't follow rules, but then they'll make up their own. Like, you know, it's amazing how they'll do it. Among all modes of purification, purity in the acquisition of wealth is declared to be the best. For he is pure who gains wealth with clean hands, not he who purifies himself with earth and water. Right? So if your occupation is pure, then you'll be pure. Like that. So that's considered the best. Like that. The learned are purified by a forgiving disposition. Those who have committed forbidden actions by liberality. Right? So in other words, yeah. It means those who are learned, they'll tend to not be forgiven because they know so many rules, they know this and that, but they have to be forgiving. Right? The person who has committed forbidden action, they generally are the ones that are heading crusade. Generally, if there's a crusade, then the person who's leading it, they themselves were involved in some way, either on the performing or receiving end of a forbidden action. Right? So for them, liberality is supposed to be, right? Because you're supposed to be accommodating, you know, like that. Secret sinners by muttering sacred texts. Means, in other words, they performed a sin no one knows about, so by reciting the sacred text, they're purified. Right? Because Manu mentioned this whole thing, you got to go out and tell the world and everything. That's not, Manu doesn't mention that. What people know about, then you do something to purify yourself so everybody's happy. But what people don't know about, then you should perform spiritual activities. Because that's the only thing that actually purifies. These other things, they may remove their reactions, but they don't remove the stock, the store of sinful desire. But by studying the scriptures, chanting, you know, associating with devotees, these remove that. So that's actually more important. And those who best know the Veda by austerities, right? Proper performance of duties, or just, you know, being a little controlled in their lifestyle. Okay. Liberality here also refers to charity. Okay. By earth and water is purified what ought to be made pure. A river by its current, a woman whose thoughts have been impure by the menstrual secretion. A Brahmin by abandoning the world, sannyas. Right. So what has to be cleaned by using earth and water, you can clean things. He'll give a little rule. Purification of things, we'll get more into detail there. Right? So then, yeah. And a river, when it moves, is purified. Like that. So flowing water is purified. When it sits, it's not. If it's very big, it's considered pure. But water is purified by moving. Like that. The body is cleansed by water. The internal organ is purified by truthfulness. Right? So truthfulness means connection with the Lord. The individual soul by sacred learning and austerities. The intellect by true knowledge. Yajnavalkya writes, yes.
I have a question regarding purifying yourself after eating.
after eating.
Yeah, you have to wash the hands, mouth, and feet.
Right.
If you were sitting at a table, for example, then the feet might not be directly contaminated, but is it a subtle contamination? And that's why.
Means, if you want to get into it, this is. This goes back to the element where we were discussing before, is that you have the performance of the activity, and it's there because Krishna likes it. Like in the Vogue Artik song, it mentions that they wash their hands, mouth, and feet, and then afterwards do that. And so it's all these different things. So Krishna likes to do like that, as we saw before, as someone who, you know, eats with wet feet, you know, then gets so much benefit. You know, it's also afterwards, washing. So if you get into it, I'm sure if we study in the Ayurveda and this and that, it will tell all kinds of things like that. Because it's considered this impure, so if you don't wash the feet, then all kinds of things can bother you. Like, remember, I think it was Aditi, then the Indra entered her womb and tried to kill the child in the womb. So he cut it into 49 pieces, but she ended up with 49 kids instead of one, right? Like that. So, but that, he could only do that because when she fell asleep either without washing or she didn't wash her feet properly. Like that.
She didn't wash her feet because she was tired.
Yeah, so she didn't wash her feet. You know, so being practical, right? So practical meant 49 kids. You know, so that's so that's there. Because the thing is the consideration also, then there's other things of just, when you eat, where does the blood go?
To the stomach.
Okay, now if the feet are warm, where does the blood stay? In your feet. Now if you wash your feet, then the blood will move back. So there's all kinds, I'm sure, if you get into it, all different things of the subtle body and all these different things and the nadis and all that. So that's what I'm saying, is that there is those aspects. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's mentioned. It's not just that they don't have anything else. The other thing is, you know, if it means if you had the option, why eat at a table? Also.
Usually it's social considerations. If you're going to your mother in the West, she prefers that you're eating at the table.
Yes, of course. Yeah, if you sat on the floor with the cat, then she might be not very pleased. Yeah. So I did once end up eating with the cat, not out of the same bowl, because I did something I wasn't behaving properly. So I did end up down where the cat ate. Yeah. Yeah, it means all the social consideration, because the Western consideration and all that, you know, like in front of the community hall, like that. You know, it's like, it means your mother would consider that to be more culture.
And she wouldn't be able to sit on the floor. So.
Yeah, sure.
But in the case of not washing the feet, is it a subtle contamination or would it be like a broken?
It depends. The point is you're taking it for granted. You're taking it that just your eating is the only consideration. But the point is bringing food, spilling food, all kinds of things are there, you know, so the area is not necessarily that clean, right? It means if it's an area where you put down things, you know, it's an open room, then you put things down, you eat, afterwards you pick it all up and clean, then it's another thing, but there, because you're right there in the proximity of the eating. But what goes on under that table and all that? When was the last time your mother cleaned under there? When's the last time she wiped there? Now, seeing that there's a rug there, she probably never did. When's the last time the dog peed on the carpet there? You know what I'm saying? So there's all kinds of considerations. Does that make sense? Because, I mean, if you want to take it further, you ate with your right hand. Why do you have to wash the left one? You know what I'm saying? So there's a certain elements of the culture. It's just the way it's done. So there is things that are built in that make it work. All these subtle and yogic and all those kind of things. They have their effect.
So apparently, by following the culture, we address many elements, even though we don't.
Don't, yeah. Just like, let's say, these mudras you use in puja. you get the benefits of them, of full yoga asanas. Like each one of these are connected with so many asanas. So you either do the full asana or you do the mudra, right? So there's so many subtle things that are there that have effect that we don't know about. You know, just like senior comes in, you stand up, all these things, people don't know these things. So the rule covers all that. That's why the rule is there. Considering everything to be considered, the rule is there. Right? So this is just the rules, social rules. But the social rule also, you know, works on what's good for health, what's good for so many different things. You know, otherwise, then you study the Veda, the whole thing. Right? Then you'll, after studying the whole thing, then you can put it all together and understand it yourself. But Smriti means that which those who have studied the whole Veda have given as the, you know, practices. Does that make sense? Yeah. Point is if you practice them, then you start to understand them. Because the thing is, what about you drink water without touching the glass to your mouth? Are you contaminated?
Yeah.
Why? What about the feet under the table? Why is it the one you're so confident? Yes, but the feet you're not so confident about.
Because I read one and the other one I couldn't find anywhere.
Which one?
The one about the drinking of the water. It's mentioned further in this.
Yeah, yeah. So the point is here it mentions about feet. You know what I'm saying? It means in the deity worship, it's like in the deity worship, every time the Lord eats, you offer Padya Margya Machamaniyam. Or Hastamukha Prakshalanam. Hands and mouth wash, and then foot wash. And then Achma. So in the culture, it's just a normal thing. You know what I'm saying? Because the thing is you've drunk water, but why? Your hands technically aren't contaminated as such. They're not muchi, but they're not fit for religious rites, because you've touched something that's been offered, or that's been offered. You've taken that, so now that's stasha. You know, things like that. So you can't touch, you know, things like your beads or books or, you know, deity paraphernalia or boga or like that. So that's why it's washed. So Prabhupada mentions a Brahmin. He washes his hands after drinking water, though he didn't touch his mouth when drinking the water. So if one comes to appreciate that level of subtlety of it, then one understands that. You know, washing the feet means the whole foot, because if the back of the foot is not washed, then Kali can enter. That's what happened to Nala. Like that, is that he was tired, so he only washed, you know, the front, you know, just stick the toes in. Like that, so Kali Raj entered through his heel and stayed with him for 12 years. Does that make sense? So, I mean, there's all kinds of things there. If you're impure, ghosts can bother you. That's their right. You know, if you're clean, then nothing much they can do. But if you're dirty, that's their right. They can bother you. So it means everybody gets their chance. It may not make sense to us, but you'll notice it's the things that aren't in the Western culture that we question. If something is similar, then we don't mind. You know what I'm saying? Like dressing according to your position, status, and all these different things. That, you know, the West also, it should be like that. You know what I'm saying? So these kind of things we can relate to, but anything different, then we generally tend to question. But then there's so many Western rituals we don't question. Like, why shake with one hand? Why not both? There's a one-handed salute is for Shudras. Right? Dweezes use a two-handed salute. Yeah. So you shake hands, use both hands. If you look at a lot of times pictures, gentlemen, that probably shake with both hands. And if you do it, the Westerners don't mind. But they don't think about it.
I would take the devotees when you talk to them because you're using them. I've been laughing.
Yeah. purification of things. Thus, the precise rules for the purification of the body have been declared to you. Hear now the decision of the law regarding the purification of the various inanimate things. The wise ordained that all objects made of metal, gems, and anything made of stone are to be cleansed with ashes, earth, and water. A golden vessel which shows no stains becomes pure with water alone. Likewise, what is produced in water, as shells and coral, what is made of stone and a silver vessel, not enchased. Right, so all these things just by water, if there's no stain, right? Like, you know, if there's baby food on it, then you got to wash it with something else. But if there's no stain on it, then just simply rinsing in water is good. From the union of water and fire arose the glittering gold and silver. Those two, therefore, are best purified by the elements from which they sprang. Copper, iron, brass, pewter, tin, and lead must be cleansed as may be suitable for each particular case by alkaline substances, acids, or water. Like that. Interesting, they mentioned pewter. The purification prescribed for all sorts of liquids is by passing two blades of kusa grass through them. For solid things, by sprinkling them with water. For objects made of wood, by planing them. As sacrifices, the purification of the soma cups called kamashas and grahas and other sacrificial vessels takes place by rubbing them with the hand and after rinsing them with water. Right? Because they just get some dust on them and stuff like that. Yes?
It says for objects made of wood by planing them. Excuse me, but English is not my first language.
Planing means, you know, you take that machine that cuts the top layer off. Like that. If wood's become impure, then by planing it, you plane off the part that's impure.
Doesn't mean that every time we use a wooden cutting board, we have to.
No. That's just done with water, warm water. Wood's purified by warm water. But this is if there's some impurity, something impure has fallen, and it's on it that you want to get rid of. The charo and the spoons called shruk and shuva must be cleansed with hot water. Likewise, the wooden sword called svia, the winnowing basket surpa, the cart for bringing the grain, the pestle, and the mortar. So they're all done with hot water. The other one's just with plain water. The manner of purifying large quantities of grains and of cloth is to sprinkle them with water, but the purification of small quantities is prescribed to take place by washing them. You have a big pile of rice, it's purified just by sprinkling with water, but if you're taking some out for cooking, that's a small, it's washed. A big pile of clothes are there, they're sprinkled. You know, you're just purifying like that. Yes.
But if we have to cook a large amount of grains, we still have
that. And then you wash it, yeah. I mean, unless you're, you know, dumping it in by truckload at a time, then you just sprinkle it with water.
But that will not purify from the dust particles and those things.
That's there. But what about the feet? You understand? So I'm saying is that on one is such a down to this, and on the other is, hey, you know. You don't want to wash your feet just being in your mother's house. You know what I'm saying? They wear their shoes outside and then inside. They go in the bathroom, they walk out, they don't wash their feet, so the whole house is impure. So just for that, you just want to, having left the house, wash your feet. But you won't do that just outside. She might get upset. So you go home and do it. That make sense? Okay. Skins and objects made of split cane must be cleaned like clothes. Vegetables, roots, and fruit like grain. Okay, vegetables, roots, and fruit like grain. If it's a big pile, you just sprinkle with water. If it's small, then you wash it. Because you're dealing with something that you're cleaning something, so then you're purifying the place. So you have a big pile of something, it's purified by sprinkling water. As you use it, you're going to take a small amount out. Then that will be purified. Right. Okay, skins are cleaned like clothes. Silk and woolen stuffs with alkaline earth. Blankets with pounded arishta fruit. Amshu patas with bale fruit. linen cloth with a paste of yellow mustard. A man who knows the law must purify conch shells, horn, bone, and ivory like linen cloth, or with a mixture of cow urine and water. Grass, wood, and straw become pure by being sprinkled with water, a house by sweeping and smearing with cow dung or whitewash, an earthen vessel by a second burning. An earthen vessel which has been defiled by spirituous liquor, urine, or dur, saliva, pus, or blood cannot be purified by another burning. That's just thrown out. Land is purified by the following five modes. Yeah, that means it's been there, but it's been sitting around and all that, and so it's not exactly what you call pure, so you reburn it. But if someone's eaten from it or anything like that, then a second burn will not purify it.
That pile of pots with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was playing.
That's the ones after eating and stuff like that. That's all thrown there. So that's just...
All those dishes made from ceramic dishes, is it coming in the same category?
Refire them every time? Stick them in your oven and refire them?
No, they just, one time you eat them and that's it.
Well, we do notice in the Vedic tradition that, you use a banana leaf or use, these other kind of leaves or, you use, silver or gold or a bell metal plates or that. Or, if you really don't have anything else, you use stainless steel. Mm-hmm. It's used only once, generally. So it's not something you go out of the way to do. Does that make sense? If your mother gives you a whole set of, bone china or something like that, then, you keep it and use it when she comes around. But otherwise, it's not your first choice.
Because many devotees' houses, they serve and, it's quite kind of...
Yeah, but I'm saying because of the porcelain element, then it's a finer stuff. It's been burnt and it's been glazed. So the glaze itself may have some element be purified. But if it wasn't glazed, then you could only use it once. So the glazing may have some effect. But generally, it's not a... in India, they wouldn't practice it. It's a Chinese practice. So somehow or another, they do all kinds, like those little cute little, red little balls they make of little things, the lions and other things like that. Those are made out of bone powder, held together with lac, like that. Yeah, so they do all kinds of stuff, those guys. So when it comes to impurity, they got it down. They really know how to do it, right? Others are small-time people. Even the Europeans. They're just groggy, the Europeans, right? But the Chinese have it refined. Okay. Land is purified by the following five modes. By sweeping, by smearing it with cow dung, by sprinkling it with cow's urine or milk, by scraping, and by cows staying on it during a day and night. So depending upon how impure it is, then you'd use these different methods. Food which has been pecked at by birds, smelt at by cows, touched with the foot, sneezed on, or defiled by hair or insects, becomes pure by scattering earth over it. Mm. Then the next question is it then you can eat it? It's been purified. No, it just means it's purified, so then it's not impure. So it's not that they... It means... Here's the general rule. As long as the foul smell does not leave an object defiled by impure substances, and the stain caused by them does not disappear, so long must earth and water be applied in cleansing inanimate things. That's the basic rule. There's a stain or a smell, you keep cleaning it till the stain and the smell goes away. That's the basic rule. And if the stain and smell won't go away, then throw it out. Get a new one. Things inherently pure. The gods declared three things to be pure to Brahmins. That on which no taint is visible, that which has been washed with water, and that which has been commended as pure by the word of a Brahmin. Right? Means you go into the deity room and there's regular paraphernalia and you don't see anything on it to make it dirty. It's clean. Right? you know, and if it's in that state, it's been washed by water, it's clean. Or Brahman says it's already clean. You say, so has this been washed? And they say, yes. So then these three things are already clean. Water sufficient in quantity in order to slake the thirst of a cow, possessing the proper smell, color, and taste, and unmixed with impure substances, is pure if it was collected on pure ground. Right? In other words, a puddle that's enough water to slake the thirst of a cow, and it looks clear, it looks proper, the area where it is pure, then that water could be used to wash your hands and things like that. Does that make sense? So that's a couple of buckets of water. So it's not a little dinky, you know, somebody just stepped there and it filled up with water. It's, you know, it's like a couple of buckets of water, how big that is, that's how big. The hand of an artisan is always pure, right? Because the artisans will bring things. Like they make a garland and they give you. So if you touch their hand or their hand has touched the garland, it's still pure. Right, you don't go around whacking them on the back and stuff, right? You know, like that. But their hand is pure, so that means whatever they touch is not impure. So it's just dealt with like you would any paraphernalia that's purified by mantra. So is every vendable commodity exposed for sale in the market, right? Whatever's there and you can see it in the market, it's considered pure. And food obtained by begging, which a student holds in his hand, is always fit for use. Right, because they're pure. They've gotten it by a pure method, they're pure. That is a settled rule. The mouth of a woman is always pure. Likewise, a bird, when he causes a fruit to fall. Right, because the bird landed on the fruit fell, so it's pure. So now it can be picked up and used for the deity, as long as it's in good shape. If it hit the ground, smooshed all over, and it's covered in dirt, you know, and dirt's all mixed. No, no. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. The mouth of a woman is always pure. So the man, he's going to go do his... He's ready. He's going to go to the temple, do his puja. His wife gives him a kiss. Now it's not... He has to go back and take a bath. And everything. Okay? Okay. A calf is pure on the flowing of the milk. And a dog when he catches a deer. So every time your dog catches a deer, he's pure. He's not, he's funky. Right? In other words, they're out hunting and the dog catches the deer, it's not impure. It can still be used in sacrifice. That's why it's in small print, because generally we wouldn't be using it that. All those cavities of the body which lie above the navel are pure, but those that are below the navel are impure. As well as excretions that fall from the body. Anything that falls from the body, it's not pure. Flies, drops of water, a shadow, a cow, a horse, the rays of the sun, dust, earth, the wind, and fire, one must know to be pure to the touch. Like, you've taken your bath, and if a fly lands on you, you don't have to go take a bath. Right? Does that make sense? Drops of water. So some drops of water fall from the sky, this, that, you don't have to worry about that. You know, unless you turn around and there's somebody passing urine on you, then that may not be exactly what we call it.
That is falling from the body.
From the?
From the body. It's impure because it's fallen from the
body. Oh, okay, yeah. From the previous one. Okay, yeah. Okay.
A shadow.
Because let's say, you know, you're walking to do puja and then there's this, you know, he's been tossed out by the Antyavasayins because they consider him too low class. So his shadow, if it falls on you, you don't become impure.
That's what they claim, right? It says in Chandra Brahma, you explain that.
Yeah, but the point is the shadow doesn't make you impure. You don't step on the shadow of something respectable, but you're not impure because the shadow falls on you. Like that. The rays of the sun, you know, unless you're a vampire. But then it is purifying, so maybe that's the problem. Dust, earth, wind, so all these different things that are... In order, because otherwise people can take cleanliness sometimes to, like that. So I've eaten and I'm impure and I stepped on the floor, so it's all impure. And that's touching the walls and that's touching the roof and that's touching the whole house and that's touching the dome and that's on the whole planet. So this whole planet is impure. You know, they sometimes do like that. So to avoid those things, then, you know, the sun, dust, earth, wind, fire, they're pure to touch. In order to cleanse the organs by which urine and feces are ejected, earth and water must be used, as they may be required. Likewise, in removing the remaining ones among 12 impurities of the body. Okay, so now it gives the 12 impurities. Fat, semen, blood, marrow, urine, feces, the mucus of the nose, earwax, phlegm, tears, the rheum of the eyes, and sweat are the 12 impurities of human bodies. Okay, Vritti, the first six are considered more impure than the second group of six. Okay.
Maharaj?
Yes.
It says the rheum of the eyes. Again, English is not my first.
I don't think anybody that knows English would understand the rheum of the eyes.
I looked it up in the Oxford Dictionary, and it says a watery fluid that collects or drips from the nose or the eyes, but that doesn't include the sleep.
You know? Yeah, no, it's that, because it's watery and then it dries. So it just means the stuff that collects in the eye or, you know, like that. It means water from the eye or things like that. So those ones are, that's in the second. So fat, semen, blood, marrow, urine, feces, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those are considered, you know, you take bath after touching those. Mm-hmm. Fat doesn't mean a very large person. Yeah, it doesn't mean if you bump into a Samoan, you have to take a bath. It doesn't mean that. That means fat, meaning the fat of the body, meaning that exposed, you know, there's no skin on that fat. Right? No. It means fat, you know, it means fat like you have the steak and there's fat on it, or the bone and there's fat on it, like that. It means that kind of thing. Because it says marrow, that means the bone is broken, the inside, like that. These six then needs requires a bath and cleaning with mud and all that. The second just require water. The mucus of the nose, earwax, phlegm, tears in the rheum of the eyes, and sweat. These ones, just if they're touched, you just have to wash your hands. Right? Like, you know, unless you're covered with sweat, then better you take a bath if you're going to do puja. Like that. If you're covered with mucus from the nose, like little babies, they're covered with like that. Yeah. So that's okay. He who desires to be pure must clean the organ by one application of earth, the anus by applying the earth 3 times, the left hand alone by applying it 10 times. It means alone, on its own, and both hands by applying it 7 times. So you all got that?
How you do it 7 times?
7 means?
No, but you open the cup. You open the hands. How you do it 7 times?
By taking earth and then cleaning and then doing like that, yeah. So, yeah. Okay, now we're appreciating rules have been cut down. Prabhupada didn't mention this. This is the standard. The genital 1 time, the anus 3 times, the left hand alone 10 times. It means you wash it on its own 10 times. Then having washed it alone 10 times, then you wash it together with the right hand 7 times. So it gets washed 17 times. That's considered clean. So now you can understand, appreciate, you know. And even after this, still the demigods, if a human being's around, kind of wondering, what's that smell? You know? Huh?
Soap.
Oh, the soap is okay, yeah. But dirt comes off really easy, so you don't have to sit there. It's not like this other stuff that the glycerin doesn't come off and like that.
It says to wash with earth. Does that clog up the drains, though, if you use...
Our drain's about, you know, this wide. It's about, 25 centimeters wide. So our drain doesn't get cleaned up on the mouth. We build our drains, and we always consider these things. Okay. Most don't. This is the advantage of being a bull. You can go wherever you want. So he just wanders around wherever he likes. Okay. Such is the pure... Oh, sorry.
Are there some families still they follow that?
Yeah, that's pretty sad. I mean, so you were talking about you open the tap. means the actual rule is someone else opens the tap. Or you've opened the tap, you've cleaned yourself, but before you actually go into the main part of the house, you have to wash with other water that you haven't touched. So you're clean now, but you're not to the point of purification of interacting with the house. So that's then as you come out of the bathroom, there's more water there that then someone else pours through. In some houses, they just combine the two, so someone else has it. Subhagmar was saying in his house, because the ground floor in the back there is where all the water, showers, washing clothes, and taking bath, all that goes on, because these huge houses, huge families. So in their house, the rule was, is you means whoever, you have to, someone else has to open the tap for you to wash. And then they would never touch the soap with their left hand. They put the hold the soap in the right hand and move it so then it falls on the left hand and you wash like that. Right? Does that make sense? That's Calcutta family. That's how he grew up. That's not, that's not that long ago. It wasn't like, 5,000 years ago or stuff like that. So he said once he was stuck for like half an hour because everybody was busy with something in the house. Something happened so everyone was all together. And he was the only one in the bathroom so he had to sit there for half an hour. But otherwise there's so many people around and it's all the main area. So there's always someone there. That's one of the advantages of these bigger families. Okay, such is the purification ordained for householders. That's the householders. It shall be double for students, treble for hermits, but quadruple for ascetics. Right. So cleanliness is basically one of the main things for the other orders. Right. So therefore, that's for householders. So they get the easy, right? So they can't complain. When he has voided urine or feces, let him, after sipping water, sprinkle the cavities, likewise when he's going to recite the Veda, and always before he takes food. Right? So achman means, because then you do all the cavities and all those different things. Okay. Let him who desires bodily purity first sip water 3 times, then 2x wipe his mouth. But a woman and a shudra shall perform each act only once. Shudras who live according to the law shall each month shave their heads. Their mode of purification shall be the same as that of Vaishyas, and their food the fragments of the Aryan's meal. Right, so they're shaving once a month, so that's pretty standard. Brahmas shave once a month, because the point is the Shudras is serving the other three orders, but the Brahman is serving the Lord. So the mood of servant is there. So we see the Shudras and Brahmins, they would both be shaving. Drops of water from the mouth which do not fall in a limb do not make a man impure, nor the hair of the mustache entering the mouth, nor what adheres to the teeth. Right? You don't become impure. If something falls in your mouth, if it doesn't touch your body, you're not made impure. Maybe where it fell becomes impure. But you're not impure, right? The mustache entering the mouth, it's not, now you have to go take a bath. That'll be a problem. Especially if you have a big one, those big handlebar mustaches. Yeah. Okay. Nor what adheres to the teeth, right? If you stick your finger in your mouth to get something out of your teeth, then you become impure. Yeah. Drops which trickle on the feet of him who offers water for sipping to others must be considered as equal to water collected on the ground. They render him not impure. Right? So someone who gives water for someone to do achman, and that water then falls on the ground so it goes on his feet, he's not impure. Right? But it's not water for washing the hands and all that and spitting and that going. That's another thing. That means if you're giving water for achma. He who, while carrying anything in any matter, is touched by an impure portion or thing, shall become pure if he performs an ablution without putting down the object. Right? What if you were carrying a grand piano or something? See, fortunate instruments in India are small. He who has vomited or purged shall take bath and afterwards eat clarified butter. After eating, let him only sip water. Bathing is prescribed for him who has intercourse with a woman. Okay, purging indicates removal of that which is induced by medicine. Right? Vomiting means it just happens on its own. Purging is when it's used by medicine. Though he may be already pure, let him sip water after sleeping, sneezing, eating, spitting, telling untruths, and drinking water. So you see someone regularly doing achman for no reasons. Likewise, when he's going to study the Veda. The following edicts are also provided by Parasara. Dust blown about by wind as well as broad streams of water suffer no defilement. Women, infants, and old men are always pure. One should touch one's right ear after having sneezed, coughed, spit, or bitten any part of one's body, as well as after having told a lie or talked with a degraded person. Touching right one's ear, that means for an initiated Brahmin, because in the right ear, the Ganga is there. If you're not initiated, the Ganga is not there, so it doesn't really do any good. The fire god, the Vedas, the sun, the moon, reside in the right ear of a Brahmana. The holy pools and streams such as Prabhas, the Ganges, etc. always reside in the right ear of a Brahmana. This is the dictum of Manu. During the prevalence of famine, in disease, or in a foreign country, or on the outbreak of a civic disturbance in one's fatherland, one's primary thought should be protection of one's body. Piety should be a secondary consideration under the aforesaid circumstances. Right? In other words, a famine, a disease, or an outbreak of a civic disturbance, one should think about how you're going to protect yourself as opposed to other elements first. By any measure, whether mild or violent, one should try to recoup one's bodily health when diseased and practice pieties when physically capable. Mild or violent. So it means purging is violent. And one need not think of the laws of decorum or cleanliness when in distress. First get rid of the trouble, then practice virtues, right? You know, unless you're Bhima. You know, you're sitting eating and then Baka comes and starts beating you and that. He finishes eating, then he washes his hands and everything, then he fights. But if you're not Bhima, you take care of the problem first, then you wash your hands like that. Okay. So it ends here. Tomorrow is topic 13, the laws concerning women.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.